Very good. Well, it's a privilege to be with you. So, as you know, we're gonna focus on just staying connected as parents. And the reality that we're here today, I think it speaks to the fact that it is a challenge, right? I mean that as we go through life, there are lots of different things that vie for our attention and focus, and certainly can pull us away from the Lord and pull us away from each other. And parenting certainly fits into that category. And Allison and I work at ACCFS. I'm one of the counselors there. And since she is my beloved wife, she gets I wrangle her into things where I can. So she is with me today, which I'm really grateful for. We've got three young kids. Our oldest is in first grade. She's six, and then a little boy, five, in kindergarten, and then our youngest is two. So that's kind of the season we're in. We're in the front end of things, and so a lot of our experience and thinking about this topic comes from that lens, but we'll try to think about other things as well. And with that, I'll hand it over to you.
So the first stage we're going to talk about is infants. With each stage, there's lots of opportunities, there's also lots of challenges. So we're going to just kind of point out a couple as we go through. Infants, it's really exciting. It's exciting when you find out you're expecting or you're adopting and you get the picture of the baby or the baby's born. And it's this new adventure. It's this miracle of life, and you're super excited about it. It's very fun. You're able to work together on something you've never done before. Neither one of you have ever done this before. And it can be really fun in that aspect. It can also be very physically demanding. If you're, like, my husband worked 8 to 5, and so the best hours of my day, I was with my kids. And then by the time he got home, I was so done. Like, it was hard to save any kind of energy to connect with him. So I think as an infant, which is probably always going to be my hardest stage, I'm not a huge baby person. So it's very, it's not life-giving to me. And so I found myself drained a lot, physically drained in the infant stage. The next stage is young children. This stage kind of gives me energy when they start kind of connecting the dots, when you start learning them character. You're getting into discipline, teaching them respect, honesty. It becomes exciting to see them grow and see them start to learn these lessons for themselves, to ask good questions. It's really fun when my kids start to, like, think about questions and ask me, and I think it can be really fun. It's also when things get really busy. Activities start coming up. We had our first summer activity with T-ball this summer. Our five-year-old was in T-ball, and it was really fun. We loved it. We went as a family, but you start realizing, like, three kids, so in the next few years, am I going to want to spend three nights away every summer at activities? You just have to start figuring that out, what your family is going to look like. So pretty soon you can find yourself in a really busy stage without even realizing it.
All right. And then as we move into the teens, you know, a neat opportunity now as they're growing into people and able to have dialogue, which is exciting, and there's opportunity for relationship both with your spouse but also with your kids at a very new level. But oftentimes in this place, there's this challenge of now you've got these little humans that aren't fully developed, but they certainly have their opinions and desires, and you move into this realm of parenting now where you're making decisions a lot of times based on things that need discernment. Like, it's not black and white, you know, I'm going to tell you what to do and you follow, and now you're moving into this realm where you've got to be able to work with them, and with that certainly comes a unique set of challenges. And I think, like, even one of my friends that's here this weekend, Craig Stickling, when I present with him, a lot of times he'll talk about with teens that he always would feel like a National Geographic photographer, that, you know, he's out on the plains just sitting for hours waiting for that perfect moment to come when he takes the picture. And it is kind of like that. With, like, you would love that at 6 o'clock, when you still got some energy and you're ready to go, that we have this, you know, beautiful dialogue about what's going on in life and your heart, but, you know, that doesn't maybe come till 11:30, and, you know, you wishing you were in bed already for 6 hours or something like that, you know, and just some of those challenges that are there, both in the parenting realm, but also how that can pull against the marriage relationship. And then moving into this season of adult children, I think no matter where we're at in the seasons of parenting, to keep that in mind, that our hope would be to get to this place someday where there's some relationship intact and we're able to be friends with our kids. Like, that we're moving to this place where they're becoming functioning adults, and we're able to dialogue with them more as friends at that point. And one of both the challenges and exciting things about parenting, I think, is as time moves on, our children's independence is steadily growing and our authority in their life is steadily declining. And that in those young seasons, to be aware of that and establishing that authority and keeping that connection here, so that when we get to this season and now it's quieter around the house, that it's not everybody's just isolated from each other, that we've spent the last 18, 20 years doing different things and on different pages, and now we don't know each other, and it's all been around our kids. And I think that's one of the challenges, is how do we make sure as we walk through parenting that the home doesn't become kid-centric, that everything revolves around kids, even though most of our time and our focus and decision is around our kids, to make sure that the home isn't kid-centric. There's things that we're doing that say, no, first priority is relationship with the Lord, then it's about us and how we invite kids into that at that point. I remember talking to my grandpa who died in the past year, and he would just say, today, things are so different. All the family, they interact around what the kids do. He said, when we were kids, everything revolved around what mom and dad did, and kids would come along. And I think just that different shift, it's fascinating to think about, and just how we can fall into that, and that can really dissolve our relationship as a couple if we're not careful.
So we know this isn't a parenting seminar, but we wanted to go through and kind of establish different stages that we're in parenting and the stages ahead of us. But in doing so, no matter which stage you're in, it's hard to stay connected. You have to pursue connection between each other because there's always going to be barriers to that connection. And I think the basis of building that relationship and that friendship in marriage is understanding how you view marriage itself. I think if I had you raise your hand and say, who thinks marriage is a covenant, you would all raise your hands because we all know that in our heads. But the way you live it out, sometimes you can fall into it being more like a contract. So to kind of break that down, a contract marriage is going to be based on leverage. It's going to be based on what you can do for me, and then in reverse, what I do for you. And that is dependent on whether or not the marriage relationship is working, is if you're doing your job and if I'm doing my job, and what I'm getting from that relationship. So covenant marriage is going to be based on commitment, that I'm committed to you, I'm in this for the long haul. It's not till love lasts, it's forever. It's until I take my last breath that I am committed to you. A contract marriage is going to be continue only if it's mutually beneficial, that if I'm no longer getting what I want out of the relationship, I'm done, I'm out. A covenant relationship is going to be like, this is lifelong, there's nothing that you can do that changes my commitment to you. A contract marriage is going to be based and focused on specific actions. You take out the trash, I'll do the laundry. Like, if you don't no longer perform your role to my standard, then I'm no longer happy in this marriage. A covenant marriage is, we're in this together. We're going to help each other. We are going to have our different lanes. Sometimes those lanes change. We're going to recognize that those lanes evolve as we grow our family, as we get older, as circumstances happen. Those roles can change. And the fact is that you're working together on that. You're being open about your expectations and your roles, and you're willing to work together in that. So viewing marriage as a contract is going to continue these. There's a lot of different myths that revolve around that. But two of the ones that we chose was, if it's hard, then it must be wrong. If this is hard, if our relationship is difficult right now, someone did something wrong, or something is wrong in our relationship. When the reality is, we all know that conflict is going to happen in any relationship. If you find the right one, it will be easy. It's hard. I must have married the wrong person. Now we're just stuck together, right? You're stuck with me. I'm stuck with you. We're just going to do this. We're just going to, like, sludge it out till the end. And if you're viewing marriage as a contract, then those lies are really easy to believe, because you're not living up to my expectations, you're not acting like my dad acted. So we must have done something wrong, something went wrong, and you can either leave the relationship or you can just decide I'm just stuck here. Neither one of those are going to work out very well. So we would just encourage you to have that basis foundation that this is a covenant, that we're committed, and we're going to work towards moving towards each other, because otherwise you're moving away from each other.
Yeah, and to kind of continue on that same framework, that the heartbeat of what we're trying to say, I think, here this afternoon is that we would argue that in whatever season of parenting we're in, or whatever season of life we're in, whether it's good or bad, that one of our goals as couples would be, how do we fight for friendship? Like, to fight for being each other's friends in the course of this relationship, and not just tolerating each other, not just getting stuck in the day-to-day things that come with parenting, whether they're 2 or 22, but really moving towards this view of friendship. And covenant is one of those things that it's built off of trust with each other. If we're going to have a covenant kind of relationship, that's a relationship that's built off of trust. It's a relationship that at that point allows vulnerability. Whereas a contract is, you know, kind of a business, like, if I know I've got things as a businessman that I'm not very good at, I'm going to hide those from the other person that I'm in contract with, because I don't want them to know about my weaknesses. Whereas covenant is this place that says, you know what, I'm willing to just put it on the table. This is who I am. These are the things that I'm scared about. These are the things that I don't know how this is going to turn out. These are the things that I do really poorly, and inviting them into that, building, you know, intimacy. And intimacy, one way to think about intimacy is into me see. So this idea that we want to build intimacy by allowing them to see into us, both our strengths and weaknesses, and that's a scary thing, but it also offers the opportunity for connection and friendship, which is very exciting and allows the relationship to grow and flourish. And it's just a different lens to think through it with. So just some practical things, like what does this maybe look like? So we can, what can I do? That mindset that says I'm here and I'm willing to do what I can. So for example, I know for her to go to Menards is going to take like 4 times longer, right, than it's going to take me. Just, we were doing on a work project this last summer, and her brother comes and it's like, why do you have 6 different screws that all require different, 6 different screw heads? They're all different lengths and different sizes. And I'm like, yeah, well, she, yeah. So, but she was willing to do that. And yeah, I've got to switch out my screw head every time, but it's just an opportunity to be, you know, how lucky I am, right? You know, or like for me, after work, like, I'm not going to know where the cumin is, right? Isn't that a spice or something like that? Or something? I'm not going to know where that is, but she's going to send me, and I'm going to have no idea where it is. And then I'm going to ask the person at the store, and they're like, I don't think that even exists, right? You know, just like probably some of you did. I don't know if it exists or not, but my reaction makes me wonder if it does. But it's going to take a while. But this mindset that says, I'm willing to do what I can, and I'm willing to make sacrifices, and again, we're in this together, more so than kind of viewing it through this lens of, you do your thing, I'll do my thing, and, you know, maybe when we hit the couch at 9:30, then that'll be our time to connect. And again, there's space for that, we need to make for that, but also if there's ways through the day to bless each other and serve each other. And in this place now of thinking about blessing, what does that look like? And in some ways, the literal sense, blessing is like adding weight to the other person. And guys, you know how much our wives love if we add weight to them, right? No, right? Yeah, no. But value, but this sense that says, I see you, you matter to me, and I'm willing to hear what's going on. So when I walk in the door, right, and there's, you know, all these things going on, my mind can quickly go into, what happened today, right? what happened today? But and then to go into instruction mode, right? As dad, like, no, 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 and hey, why didn't you do this? And if I can see that as, you know what, I want to come home and bless. I want to come home and add weight and value in the sense that says, I see you, you matter to me, and I'm willing to connect with you around how was your day and what happened, and that hopefully she can do that with me as well, and it can focus on connecting first before we move into the instruction or, you know, those sorts of things. Or, again, that we're in this together, that we're on the same page. I think one of the things that Satan loves to do is to turn our spouses into the enemy, right? And we know that, but day to day, it's so easy for that to happen, to feel like if she were for me, these things would happen. And again, that's moving back into that that contract view of marriage rather than this covenant view that says, no, I know she is for me, and we want to fight for recognizing and remembering we're on the same team here rather than against each other. And just enjoy serving each other. Like, to be a servant in today's society, in today's world, is not what we would consider a high calling. And we know that that's exactly who Christ was. That's exactly what he came and did. And when we get the opportunity to serve each other, that's a great privilege in seeing it through that lens. And then here, the last point, just focusing how to benefit the other, to just step into that space that how can I be a help to you today and serve you in that.
So once you have established your vision of marriage and what your definition of marriage is and what you want your marriage to look like, then we pursue this vision of friendship. What does it look like for us to be friends? And this is going to feel a little bit like a rabbit trail. We love this verse. We're going to camp out here for a while. There's a lot of really good practical character traits, great things. But I want to focus on the beginning for just a minute. Colossians 3:12, put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved. And I'm going to stop there. And I'm going to tell a story that always makes me cry, but I'm going to do it anyway. Take one for the team. Because I think you can work towards friendship with your spouse, but if your identity is in your marriage or your parenting, it's never going to work. And I think we all know that on paper, that our identity is in Christ. But when we look at decisions that we make, when we look at the end of our day, what we think was really productive, or if we did a good job or a bad job, so many times we draw a line back to how our children acted, how we acted with our spouse. We draw lines from those parts of our day to what we think what we think God looks at us and sees. And so it's crucial to understand that when God looks at you, he's not looking at he doesn't expect you to be a perfect parent. He doesn't expect your kids to be perfect kids. He knows that that's not a reality. That's not even what he's looking for. I worked for 5 years before we had kids. Looking back, I realized I was good at my job, and I was told I was good at my job. I got raises and performance reviews. I got paid. Good grief. It was great. And during those 5 years, he was working as well. We would get up in the morning, we would have a hot cup of coffee, I would sit on a chair, he would sit on the couch, I had this cozy red blanket, and we would do our devotions, and it was awesome. I'm so thankful for those times. I hope that happens again someday. But then we had our first baby, and I went from working, I had the baby, and then I was a stay-at-home mom. And I remember our moms from church had this moms group, and they would meet, and it started. I missed the first semester because I was working, but then I had this baby, and I took my six-week-old in January to this mom's group, and I didn't know what I was doing. And they had us get down on our chair and pray. And I don't remember the speaker. I don't remember what she said. I don't remember what I was supposed to pray about. All I remember is I thought, I can't do that because God is upset with me. He's so disappointed in me because I have not gotten up for 6 weeks. I've not gotten up. I haven't read my Bible with my hot cup of coffee and my cozy red blanket. And I failed him. I have failed him because I've been so tired. And our firstborn she was a night owl, so the first 6 weeks she was staying up to like 1 or 2 in the morning. So he would go to bed, he had to work the next day. I was staying up with this baby. I don't like babies, you guys. I don't like babies. And I was staying up with her and she wouldn't go to sleep. And as I sat there, and I knew no one knew what was going on, but I couldn't pray. I didn't have the words because I knew he was disappointed in me. And he met me there, and he poured truth into my soul and said, "You have no idea. I love those mornings with you on that chair with that cozy blanket. I love that. But I have so much more for you. You prayed over your child's salvation last night at 2 in the morning. Like, you have never prayed so much in your life as you have this last 6 weeks. I was terrified to raise this tiny human. And I realized how much I had gone to God over the last 6 weeks. And God said, "This is what I want. I don't want you to be the perfect mom. I want to transform your heart and make it more like mine because you're my daughter. Not because I want you to be the perfect mom to Kennedy, but because I love you and I want to sanctify you and I want to teach you these things about me." And I just remember being blown away. Like, at the end of the day, God does not see me as a bad mom or as a good mom, as a bad wife or as a good wife. He sees me as holy and beloved, not because of what I did, but because of the cross. And I think if you don't believe that, and you don't remind yourself, and you don't preach that to yourself every day, you start to believe these lies. That I was a bad mom, God sees me as a bad mom. I was a bad wife, God sees me as a bad wife. And then the rest of this verse is never going to take effect, is never going to be helpful if you don't believe those first words.
And just the foundation of knowing who we are in Christ, then I think allows us then to think about the second part of these verses. So I'll just read through all of them. Colossians 3:12-14. "Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness." And just beautiful verses, like just beautiful verses. And my guess would be that if I were to say, tell me what verses come to mind when you think about marriage, my guess would be that Colossians wouldn't be the thing that comes to mind. And that makes sense. But I think what we have to remember that's so easy to forget is the verses that do come to mind with marriage are built on verses like this. Like the verses that we think of that talk about the structure of marriage, or, you know, how the wife is to treat the husband or the husband is to treat the wife. Like, those are built off of these fundamental relationship principles that are there and need to be intact before you can move on to those. And so often we forget that if those verses and how we view each other and how we interact with each other aren't built on concepts like, just think about these for 1 minute here. Like, if I would interact with my wife this way consistently every day, with mercy and kindness, with humility and meekness, with long-suffering, with forbearance, with forgiveness, and with love, like, how much that would transform our relationship and allow for friendship in whatever's going on, in whatever our circumstances are. And again, if we can do that without putting our identity in our circumstances, remembering that our identity first lies in Christ, and that can give us courage and strength to then live these things out and step into that with each other, the power of that and the transformation of that, I don't know that we could overstate. And it's convicting to me when I think about how I view or think about my friends versus how I look at my spouse. Like, if I think of my friends, like, I go into those relationships without expectation. I go into those relationships just looking forward to being together and enjoying who God's created them to be. And too often, the person that I love the most and that I care about the most, I don't do that with. That I that I look at it much more through a lens of contract, or much more through a lens of I do this and you do this, and it just destroys the whole foundation. And if I can instead move to this place that says, you know what, I'm here with you. And when we get into those parenting situations and we don't know what to do, that I could be honest enough with her that says, yeah, I don't know what to do either. Whereas it can be really easy, you know, and I come home and I've got six good solutions for what you could do here in this situation. That's not going to be helpful at all. They're probably not going to work anyways. But really, first, to connect with her before providing instruction, trying to understand her. And in that, for her to feel like she's my beloved, and wise for you to look at us and to have belief in us that can come then from this. And just having, what a wonderful goal of being able to like each other, right? I think one of the saddest things in my mind as far as the Christian marriage is that we look at marriage as something that's this static organism. That it just is. Instead of this relationship that we need to be fighting towards growth and maturing. Like that's what the whole Christian walk is all about. It's about sanctification. It's about, yeah, I need to work at this and I'll work at that. And then it's like, oh yeah, and then now I need, and it's just like steadily, there's no destination that we get to and we just say, now we coast. Like that's not the message of the Scriptures. Not that we earn favor, but it's that as we get to know God and He changes us and He grows us, it's this evolving place of growth and sanctification. And if we could look at marriage through that lens rather than just this, well, we're committed, so we'll just tolerate this time. And what a sad way to view marriage.
So I think the goal of friendship is so... it's vital. It sounds really great. And there are so many things that keep it from happening in our actual day-to-day life. So we're going to talk about some of those barriers. I recognize that no one's going to be like, all of these are applicable. But for all of you, some of these are applicable, or one of these are applicable. So think about which ones, as we go through it, which ones maybe you struggle with, or as you grow, as your kids grow, what are some in the future that you're going to have to deal with? The first one is time. I kind of approach this two different ways. There's like seasonal times when you know, we're starting a family business. The next 12 months are going to be insane, but we're in this and we're going to simplify these certain parts of our life. You know, we're going to have pizza 3 times a week because that's what we can do for dinner. And so there are times when you have like an end date of like, we're really busy. These are things we're going to simplify. Then there's like, this is our life. Like, we have these things. It's really important to us. And we don't have a lot of time for each other. If that's the case, you have to reevaluate things that you can cut out of your life. So if you are living in a busyness where you don't have time for each other right now, and there's no end date on those, or nothing that's going to change in the future, then nothing's going to change in the future, right? So to just be really honest with each other, if you're happy with how your schedule is right now, to sit down and say, you know, how do you want our schedule to look like over the next 6 months? Are you happy with how many things we have going on in the evenings? Are you happy with how many activities we're in? And be really honest. And sometimes cutting those things out are really painful. They're good things. I'm guessing all the things you're involved in are really good things, and sometimes you have to say no to good things. You might be really overwhelmed. It might feel like a really big thing to ask to work on friendship, because there's so many barriers or so many hills that you have to climb to reach friendship. There's so many things that you don't like about the other person. And so to that, I would say to just start one thing this week. If it feels really overwhelming and it feels like nothing's going to work, just pick one thing that you can do, not one thing that they can do, one thing that you can do next week, whether it's send a text in the middle of the day saying how much you love your spouse, sending them pictures, of the kids. I do that a lot with our day, so that when he gets home, I don't have like, here's the 4,000 things we did today, and I'm going to tell them all to you, but to send him pictures. Hey, here we are at the park. And then he kind of knows how our day went, and he knows how our day went, right? So he knows. He knows like the temperature of the room before he comes in. But just to pick one thing that you can do differently, if it looks too big, picking 10 things to do differently Monday morning probably won't work. You might just be unaware. One of you might be unaware, you might both be unaware. If you haven't had the conversation of, you know, how do you think, what do you think our friendship looks like? On a scale from 1 to 10, how do you think our friendship is doing? On a scale to 1 to 10, how do you think our marriage is doing? And you might be really surprised, those answers might be really different. If that's the case, invite someone alongside, pick someone that you both respect, that is doing it well, and ask them questions. Just have them over. Be really open, vulnerable, and honest with each other about how you're feeling. Because if nothing changes, then nothing changes, right? And it might just be that one of you is unaware. And if that goes on for 30 years, it's not going to end well, right? Like, nothing's going to change after 30 years. Communication might be really hard for you. We think it's really valuable to learn how to fight well, to learn how to argue through things well. And to do that, you first have to communicate well. So you have to learn how to go back and forth. If that's difficult for you to have a conversation without it getting in the red zone really fast, identify three green topics that you can talk about, three things that you can, at the end of the day, that you can talk about that you know you're not going to fight over, and get used to that back and forth every day talking. And then when something comes up, you're able to go back and forth without jumping right into the red zone because you've had that conversation in those times. And, you know, there are couples that haven't learned to fight well for 40 years. And then it feels so big because they're harboring, one of them might be harboring 40 years of resentment. And then it feels impossible. So, like, just start tomorrow. Start having those conversations that are really hard. It's not going to get easier, right, down the road. And you might just be in different roles. You might be in your lane. I feel like one of the tendencies I get is like, I'm in this lane, I'm going to do the laundry, I'm going to do the dishes, you go to work, you come home, you help the kids put to bed. Like, you have your roles, and you don't really interact much within those roles. And some of your days might interact a lot more than others. I have a friend who grew up in Naperville, city girl, had no idea what a farmer was. She married a farmer. She met him in college. They actually lived in big cities the first 5 years of their marriage. Just moved back a couple years ago to the family farm, and he is farming with his dad. She has no idea. It's her second harvest. Doesn't know anything about farming. She was out in their budget. They allocated babysitting budget during harvest so that she could have a break. She is spending those 3 hours every week in the tractor with him, which I'm like blown away by. She admits she would rather go to Target, right? That's what I want to do when I have 3 hours away from my kids during harvest, when he's not home except for 6 hours of sleeping every night. But she recognizes, I don't like the tractor. I don't know what's going on. There's all these buttons and all these things, and I don't know what he's talking about with acres. But she's investing in what he's doing because it's building a friendship, even though it's something. And he has actually invited her into conversations about the farm. He asks her for wisdom on purchases. They purchased this tiling machine. But he asked her, I don't know anything about tiling. We're supposed to pray about purchasing this tiling machine. And I think it's so cool to see that their worlds just colliding when it would be so easy for her to be like, I don't know anything about farming. Like, you just do it, and then you can come home, and we can do the home thing. I think that would be really easy to fall into. But they're just being really intentional about inviting each other into their roles and saying, we're in this together, and you might not know a lot about it, but I'm going to ask for your opinion, and we're going to work through it together and be a team.
One of my favorite stories with that couple is Allison's friend. She can't figure out, like, why this farmer doesn't just harvest this corn. Like, why doesn't people just go and just harvest whatever the corn they want? And it's just like, I've never thought of that. Yeah. That's just like,
yeah.
Yeah, like these unwritten rules are like, wow, that is, huh? You are much more deceptive and devious than you appear on the surface. But yeah. And so just thinking about a few more of the challenges, because we realize, like, again, like we started, like, staying connected as a couple and fighting for friendship, this is hard. One of the books that I read in the past few years, it was probably one of the most challenging I've read. It was called Relationships, A Mess Worth Making. Right, I like really inspirational title. but it's not. Relationships are really messy, and they're really hard, and they take a lot of effort. So we recognize it's going to be a challenge, and doing this isn't to avoid the challenge. It's how do we walk through that in a way that's restorative and leads to connection? And because just naturally, marriages are going to drift apart. Naturally, our lives fill up with kids and work and projects and all these things, and we drift away from each other. And then that's when that happens, when we get to that season when, you know, we're down the road and we don't know each other and just move into isolation, and that's a scary place to be. So wherever we're at, we want to fight the natural current that will lead that way. So, and to be able to do this, I think one of the things we want to try to do is to move towards acceptance of our spouses and our children, right? Like, God has uniquely formed each of us, and it's great, but it's also hard, right? It's one of those things. It's really easy for me to think about the things as far as God's created Allison and some of the things that she do, and it just gets really annoying, right? I mean, I don't know if you ever experienced that, but there's probably things that your spouse does that are just really annoying. I don't ever experience that, but, you know, again, maybe you do. But it is, and in that, just to remember that the things that a lot of times we get frustrated with, the things that we think are just annoying, are really not that big a deal. Like, the way that they smile, or, you know, the social tics that they do that are different than us, or whatever it might be, like, that's just part of who they are. And again, if I go back to Colossians, like, if I can view her the way that God views her, and through Christ, rather than me seeing it through a lens of what I do and what I prefer, and just saying, hey, you've got to do this different, when it's not that big a deal. But and with our kids too, our kids are going to be very different than us. At least some of them are. And it's so easy to get kind of that self-righteous, my way is the way to do things, when it doesn't have anything to do with the way God does things. It's just what we prefer. And then we turn into these places that we fight these things that really don't matter to God. And that's really hard to resist, but really important. And in this, as we think about challenges that come up day to day, like, we're going to have those moments when we get triggered, you know, whether that's triggered with anger or hurt. And if we can have the goal that in those things to try to do the next right thing, what's the next thing that I could do that would be honoring to the Lord? Now, obviously, in the moment, that's really hard, but I think that would be a wonderful goal for us to pursue. Now, that's particularly hard if you've got, you know, years that have been very difficult. And if you're in that place that Allison talked about where you're overwhelmed and you're not even sure where to start, to do the next right thing is what you need to do, but it's really hard because all you can see is the mountain that you feel like you need to climb, and it feels like doing the next right thing isn't enough. But sometimes that's all you can do. That's all you need to do. And so in those moments when you're triggered, and maybe that's, you know, at the end of the day, apologizing. Maybe that's in the moment, taking a few deep breaths and going out for a walk, whatever that might look like. And then the last one here, and this might be the most important, I think, that if we as spouses can fight for having a positive story of our spouse in our mind. Like, there's this constant chatter going on in our mind through the day, and if that chatter about our spouse can be positive, that'll change so many of our interactions. It's so easy as we walk through life to build what we call stories about other people, and that could be stories like they're a villain, or that I'm a victim, or that I'm helpless to do anything. You know, stories like that, or whatever's running through your mind, and even at, you know, for you, the moms that are home with kids, like, the stories that are going through your minds are inevitably going to be the stories you're telling your kids about their father. And that's either going to lead to connection and friendship and relationships in the home, or that's going to lead to division and hurts and bitterness and resentment. So as I walk through my day, I want to be trying to tell myself stories about Allison that are in line with Colossians, that I'm thinking about how I can love and respect and bless her even when I'm not with her. Because otherwise, in those moments when we are together, whenever you have interaction with another person, there's so many assumptions that really are the foundation of how you view those interactions. And if those assumptions are going to come from the stories you've been telling yourself all day, and that's how, you know, we get to this place where there's a lot of bitterness and resentment, whereas in those interactions, we can give a lot of grace and forgiveness if those stories have been positive through the day. We probably don't have time to go through these. So these are basically just five questions here at the end that for you guys to kind of think about and discuss that connects with what we've walked through a little bit. And so whether you have a few minutes now or that might be another thing to do later. But I guess our encouragement would be just we would love as we walk through life that we would pursue friendship together and connection through the challenges. And we would just encourage you in that. And even in your potluck groups and in your friend groups, like, that's something worth fighting for. So when the guys are together, that again, if we go back to those stories, that when we're together, like, we're talking about our wives in ways that are honoring to the Lord. Like, we need to do that. Like, it should not be a place that we get together and talk about all the things we're frustrated with. Now, there's a place to do that, maybe with a mentor or something, but that's not the place. And the sisters as well, like, to fight for having communication about your spouse and that's positive and respectful in those moments, which isn't always easy, but these kind of things will never happen apart from that. So it's been a pleasure to visit with you and just be with you this afternoon.